This is Phil Ferrin. And I am driving home. I haven't been speaking for a few minutes. So, didn't quite have the vocal cords all lined up correctly, but that's okay. It's been a good week. I'm just kind of driving around because I'm going over to get Aiden from school. So, Dustin, let's see. This is the week to announce this. Dustin passed his paramedic. So, yay! National Registry. He had to send in a bunch of fingerprinting stuff to some agency in Missouri, and then they had to hand it off to some licensing agency. And so he can get his number, and he's hoping all that's going to come in by the 20th, because then he can start his academy, which I think is just like an initiation, with Cox, so that he can start using some of this knowledge that he has, which he's not allowed to use at this point because he's not officially hired by Cox as a paramedic. So, but that'll come. It'll come. He's just waiting. He's got an app that is like his licensing something or other, where you can see, and then he's got an app that shows him how his applications are approving. He's waiting for some button to go green on there, and then once it goes green, then he can like do the next thing, and he's got it all under control. But he pulled up his app and showed me his certification there that, you know, he had passed his paramedic test. So we were praying and praying and praying Monday, but you know, God's good. Got it the first time. Ta-da. Good. So now he's checking on classes. He's going to call his advisor at Ozark Technical College, see what classes he has to take for gen ed stuff, so that he's ready to bridge into the actual nursing program. So the classes don't sound like they're going to be that hard. It's just a matter of slogging through them, and he has six to do. So, you know, he'll take them at the pace he can do them. At one time he was talking about doing them this next year, like trying to take three in the spring and then three in the fall, or whatever, two in the summer and one in the spring and three in the fall. I don't know. We'll figure it all out. But we are on to the next step now. So yay. So all is well. Writing is going well. This was the official first week. I'm smelling something kind of electrical burning with my car. I hope that's just burning some stuff. Well, you know what it could be. It could be squirrels putting stuff in my engine again. I need to check that when I get home. So, because I have had a problem with that in the past, packing up shells and things on top of my engine, and then it smelling like it was setting fire. So writing is going good. This is the first week of the second sprint of the last book, and I'm right on target for words. I'm a little bit ahead, but everything's fine. I did have a little bit of bump somewhere along the line. I earned an extra 1,000 words that I hadn't written down, so I got a little head start, but I'm already over 200 words, and I suspect, you know, it's fine. We're fine. We've got time. All is well. But so far, that's been going good this week, because I've been able to get the writing done and then have time left over, and when Aiden has shown up, I've been able to get up regular time in the morning to get him and then get all my words packed in for the day, and so I've got the rest of the day. Made preparations for Rubber Ducky Day, so that's what's coming up tomorrow, and I don't have Aiden tomorrow, so on Wednesday, I think she's the principal or the superintendent of the school. She's the highest administrative person there. At Pleasant View, I saw her when I was walking in. We chit-chatted for a little bit, and I said, yeah, it's Rubber Ducky Day on Friday. And she said, oh, that'd be fun. And I said, unfortunately, I'm not bringing Aiden to school that day. And she went, oh. I said, I could swing by, but it would have to be earlier. She said, well, what time? I said, 8:15. She said, okay, 8:15. I said, okay, 8:15. I said, how do I let you all know I'm here? She said, I will be watching for you. I said, okay. So we're going to swing by and do that tomorrow. Tried the rubber ducky costume on last night. Still fits, all is well. So that's fun. It's just silly. And it's just fun and silly. So that's good. All is well there. Still working on, I'm printing out Bowser's shell, his turtle shell that he has on the back for the Mario Day now. And that all seems to be going well. I've got the basic shell put together, and then there are all these little inlays in the shell that I'm printing out now that I'm just going to epoxy together. So I'm not going to paint the shell at all. I've got Bowser's head made. I just need to put some eyes in it. I'm also working on the little emblem of Mario on his hat, the Mario Brothers emblem, that white emblem with the M inside it. That's what I'm going to actually use to see with, since my head is going to be up in the hat. And so I'm cutting around that, the white circular thing that you put the M on. I'm cutting out where the white would be around the M, and then I'm going to cover that with the, I use needlepoint 14 plastic foundation that you use for needlepoint, and that's real good because the holes are close enough together that you can't really see through it, but when you're close up you can see through it from the other side, so it kind of functions like a one-way mirror, and it's easy for people to mistake that as just a textured piece of something. Consequently, it makes a pretty good little screen for you to kind of hide when people are wondering, how are you seeing out of that? So I'm cutting around that, getting that, and then I'm going to have to cut a hole in the hat as well, but I have a little coping saw, so that shouldn't be much of a problem. Then it'll be assembly, because there's going to be lots of anchoring the pieces together, and I'm going to use zip ties this time because the pieces themselves were not designed to be glued together. Because of the way this was created, the 3D model files were created, and so because of that, I'm just gonna zip tie stuff together and then paint it. I think that'll make it a little more solid because there's some weight involved with this, and there's some weight torquing it in odd ways, and so it'll be good to have something that has something a little more substantial to it. Anyway, so I've got 15 minutes here or so before I have to pick up Aiden, and I probably mentioned this topic, that I had notes on this topic last week, and I didn't actually check to make sure I didn't talk about this that last week. I don't think I did. Because I found something else to talk about since it was New Year. I talked about, the little stray dog is back here at the school. Because I found something else to talk about last week. I think I went for a walk last week and chatted about the year that's coming up and chatted about, the interesting things that were coming together and that it might be the rapids in 2026, or at least I felt like it was the rapids coming up. That's what I talked about last week. I was just checking the website. So I know this is a really inflammatory topic. I get that, but I think any time that we're having a reaction like, but without even listening, that's flesh. and something is going on that the flesh is trying to hide, or something is going on where the flesh is trying to manipulate us. And certainly, when the topic of vaccines comes up, there is a whole lot of that comes out. But I don't think there's anything wrong with looking at the topic and questioning the topic. Just like I didn't think there was anything wrong with looking at the COVID vaccine and questioning. For the record, I did not get the COVID vaccine. My wife did get the COVID vaccine. With her weakened immune system, we kind of weighed it back and forth, and she said, I think I should go ahead and get it. And I said, that's fine, sweetie. So instead of that, I just relied on taking a prophylactic dose. Is that what that's called? Preventative dose of ivermectin every week. And then when I did come down with COVID, I just doubled up my dosages on that to a therapeutic dose. And, you know, I was through Delta, which was one of the bad ones, in about 5 days, bad cold symptoms, but that was it. Never lost my sense of smell. I did struggle with the fatigue and weariness for almost 2 months afterwards. Occasionally woke up in a cold sweat. But for the most part, COVID was not that big of a deal for me. And I'll have to say that that whole experience of COVID, it really made me question a lot of things. And it made me aware of much more than I had already concluded. Sometimes as I would talk to others about COVID, in particular, I had one response that, well, if what you're saying is true, it would mean that the CDC would have to be corrupt and the FDA would have to be corrupt. And, you know, my response is to look at them and go, yup, because big pharmaceutical companies have a lot of money, and they contribute to the survival of the FDA and the CDC, and they pay royalties back to the FDA and CDC. And nothing kind of really explained that whole process to me more than Robert F. Kennedy Jr.'s book, The Real Anthony Fauci, which there is enough inflammatory stuff in there that if it wasn't true, he would be sued. I mean, honestly. But as I've said in the past, anytime I was spot checking references, because the book is heavily researched and heavily referenced, so he's not just making stuff up. His team, he has a killer research team, Robert F. Kennedy Jr. does. And every time I would look up an article that an incident that he was talking about in that book, I found articles supporting it from multiple sources of the things that had happened. And just as a sidebar, when that whole thing was going on, we, in our small groups, we had a particular couple that was, you know, staunchly for the vaccine, staunchly for whatever the administration at that time, the Biden administration, wanted to do with them. And he had made a couple of side comments in group about it. And I was walking him out to the car one day and I said, you know, the one thing that I find fascinating about all of this is, I said, the pharmaceutical companies are now the heroes. And he said, yeah. He said, but I said, I remember that the pharmaceutical companies have been sued more than any other business segment. And they have paid out tens of billions of dollars. because of judgments against them for malpractice and malfeasance and fraud. And I said, up until COVID came along, these were not necessarily those whom we would call heroes. And yet now, they're suddenly the heroes. That's very odd to me. And the guy looked at me and he said, well, yeah. So, and I just dropped it at that because, I mean, if that's not enough to make you pause and say, wait a minute, is there more going on here? So I had already kind of not been completely in favor of everything that the pharmaceutical companies were doing. And then when COVID came along and there was what I felt was a rushed vaccine and claims that it's safe and effective when there was only 3 months worth of testing, which is practically worthless when it comes to vaccines. And then even after all the variations and things came out and the variants and all these different ways of, and they kept using the formula from the original, you know, it's just like, this doesn't quite seem right. And then, of course, there were all kinds of stories that seemed to just be getting ignored and strong-arm tactics. And I was just, no, thank God I wasn't in an industry that required getting the vaccine. So Brent Weinstein had a podcast that I would recommend listening to because it is fascinating, where he interviewed Aaron Siri, S-I-R-I, just like the Apple helper, who's a civil rights attorney and in fact specializes in vaccine litigation and policy. And Weinstein, at the beginning, Brent explained that he was historically pro-vaccine and fully vaccinated himself because he traveled, and as I did, and I got vaccinated a lot when I was growing up in the 60s and the 70s, and I was in the Philippines, you know. Weinstein admitted that the COVID vaccine rollout just shattered his trust due to what he perceived as immediate and obvious misstatements, much like me. So that experience then prompted him to re-examine not just the COVID vaccines, but the entire childhood vaccine paradigm he had previously accepted without scrutiny. And this is the thing. Accepted without scrutiny is the thing. We've just been assuming all along that whatever process existed to create safe vaccines for our children was actually a process that was trying to produce safe vaccines for our children. And if you suggested anything else, then immediately you're branded as an anti-vaxxer. Which doesn't really seem like it should be how science proceeds. You know, I mentioned months ago about a discovery in one of the congressional hearings where someone for vaccines came and made this claim that this idea that vaccines have never been tested against a placebo is just absolutely false because I've got a list of 640 some odd trials right here that are from the childhood vaccine schedule, and they show that they've been tested against a placebo. And then it was Aaron Siri, the subject of this interview that Brent Weinstein was doing, who came on after that, and he started going through them all and basically knocked them out, easily knocked them out. Some of them had nothing, most of them had nothing to do with the childhood vaccine schedule. How do you make such a blatant error as that unless you expect that you're just going to make pronouncements from on high and everyone just agrees with you? Because if you don't, then you get labeled as an anti-vaxxer. And they, in this, you know, in this podcast, began to go through what's going on with childhood vaccines. So, you know, Weinstein was saying as a child, there were roughly three routine vaccines and about 3 injections in the first year of life. And I think according to Siri, he says that today an infant receives 25 injections before their first birthday. Most are administered in the first 6 months during critical neurological and immune development. And Siri emphasized that many vaccines were added in the 1990s and early 2000s, such as Hep B, Hib, pneumococcal, Prevnar, and others that did not exist in the early schedules. To which Brent Weinstein, you know, was raising a concern, but he said humans have evolved to encounter these pathogens naturally and develop immunities to them as they are encountered, not to be blasted all at once. Because there certainly has been no testing that has been made public over the effects of blasting children with this many vaccines. And in addition, you know, they started going through, which is really a fascinating thing, about how testing is done for these vaccines. And Siri claims that there is no routinely injected childhood vaccine on the current CDC schedule that was licensed based on a long-term placebo-controlled safety test. He said what they do is they test the vaccines against other vaccines. So they get 2 groups of children. They give one group the experimental vaccine, then they give the other a regular vaccine, and then they see, you know, what the difference is in bad reactions. But he said what they're comparing against, the quote-unquote control group with that vaccine, that's never been tested against placebos either. And he said the worst version of this was when they did the pneumococcal vaccine series, Prevnar 7, they tested it against Prevnar 13 or PVC 15. Each new version was tested against a previous version. And in some cases, the previous version was still experimental and it hadn't been given clearance. But they said in trials, well, only 7-9% of healthy infants experience serious adverse events. And since they did in both groups, testing an experimental virus or vaccine against an experimental vaccine, they got approval because the experimental vaccine that they were trying to prove was not harmful, was not any more harmful to the infants than the other experimental vaccine. 7-9% serious adverse events. And yet we're licensing it to go in the arms of our children. Yeah, this said regulators deemed this acceptable because the rates were similar between groups. I mean, you know, as Brent Weinstein said, this logic masks absolute risk and fails to establish any true safety baseline. I mean, it's just. But the issue is, as you probably know, that there was a National Childhood Vaccine Injury Act of 1986. Which granted vaccine manufacturers immunity from liability. And it covers all vaccines added after 1986. So this is actually pretty perverse when you think about it. Because the vaccine manufacturers went to Reagan and said, well, it's very difficult to manufacture these vaccines, and there's always going to be danger that something's going to go bad in these childhood vaccines, and we just can't survive the lawsuits that we're going to get if we don't have some protection. And if you don't give us protection, then children are going to die. That was the case they made. In essence, they were saying, well, we know that the vaccines that we're creating are dangerous to children and might kill some of these children, but you have to give us immunity so that we can develop these vaccines. Because if you don't, then children are going to die. And of course, the immediate assumption is that less children are going to die from the adverse effects of the vaccines than would die from the childhood diseases. But there's a deep problem with that assumption. And that is, according to them, when you actually look at the deaths associated with all of these childhood diseases that they're trying to stamp out using these vaccines, all of them, the death rate on all of them was dropping by significant percentages because of increased hygiene, because of better treatment, because of... So we were already on the way to dealing with these childhood diseases to keep less children from dying. And instead of going that route, we then gave drug companies total immunity from prosecution. Now, unless you believe that the executives of all of these pharmaceutical companies are angels incarnate, there's only one thing that's going to happen. If you give vaccine companies, or really any group of people, the chance to produce a product that they cannot be sued for, that the federal government will buy from them, and they can completely ignore any safety parameters because they've been indemnified and because the people who are licensing those products will just license them through on the basis of experiments where you're doing trials and validating that this experimental vaccine is okay simply because it only caused as many harms as another vaccine that went through that wasn't tested against a placebo. Because at no point are you actually saying, okay, we're going to give this one group the vaccine and we're just going to leave the other group alone and use them. We're just going to give them a placebo and they're not going to know which is which. And we're just going to see how these children go. Now, there was a study, a small study, I can't remember, that some reputable college or hospital carried out where they did do an actual trial against a placebo and the results came out so bad that they just buried the results. I should have looked it up. I didn't look it up. So if all this stuff is true, should we not be talking about it? And should we not be looking at other countries around the world and saying, you know, there are other places in the world where they have done this research. So what have they concluded about these vaccines? And what have they done? And from what Siri says, many of the European countries have cut way back on the number of vaccines that they recommend because this just turned into a money crank for the pharmaceutical industries. And I know it's easy just to say, well, if you stop vaccines, children are going to die. But there are some horrific things that are happening right now because of these vaccines. I mean, I told you the story of Dustin getting called to the home of some parents because their son had just gotten the pneumococcal vaccine hours before. And he was healthy. He was an athlete. He was all this kind of stuff. He gets this vaccine and within a limited amount of time, he's having full-blown seizures, throwing up, aspirating the vomit. And Dustin just said, that kid's life is ruined. It's just going to be ruined from now on out. They managed to keep him alive and get him to the hospital, but he said this, Okay, how many of those cases are there? Because apparently, according to the testing that Siri reports, 7 to 9% of infants having serious adverse reactions isn't enough to get these things pulled or not approved. So how many of these adverse reactions are there? And we just keep sticking these things in children's arms. All under the guise of, well, if you don't do this, children are going to die. You know, so maybe these vaccines are effective at keeping children from getting a specific disease that we can usually treat now. But how many harms are done? And that's, they got to the conclusion that that's really what you have to look at. How many doses do you have to give of these vaccines to keep one child from contracting this disease and having serious consequences from the disease? And how many adverse events are you creating by giving that many children the vaccine? It always has to be balanced between the two. You can't just look at one side of it. The only reason the pharmaceutical companies want you to just look at one side of it is because if you looked at both sides of it, people would start demanding that that vaccine get taken off the childhood vaccine schedule. And the deal is, if I understood Siri correctly, if that vaccine is on the childhood schedule, it is immune from prosecution, period, even if it's given to an adult. So that's a big deal. So if you can get it on that schedule, now you can give it out willy-nilly as much as you want, and no one's going to be able to come after you. Which doesn't seem like a good idea. I mean, it just doesn't. And then you get situations where you've got this board getting together to talk about things like the COVID vaccine on a, you know, on a conference call, on a Zoom call. And they're discussing the pros and cons of it at one time. And I saw the tape. I can't tell you exactly who said it or when they said it. But one of these high-ranking people who were supposed to give the green light or turn down whether or not they should recommend giving the COVID vaccine to, you know, under 12-year-olds, he just said at one point, he said, look, why are we discussing this so much? We just got to start sticking this in children's arms and watch what happens. I mean, is that really how we do it? We just start sticking it in people's arms. And then if it goes really bad, we go, oh, sorry, guess we didn't know about that. There's absolutely no better way to do this. That doesn't seem great. Especially when children were at such low risk from COVID. And again, how many dosages do you have to have in order to prevent something significant happening to a child who contracts the disease versus what type of side effects are there for that same number of children? It's a gnarly little problem. And I don't know what the answer is. But I do know we should be able to talk about it. And you are welcome to do whatever research you want to do. And you are welcome to conclude whatever you want to conclude. But for me, there's a whole bunch of questions that really need to be addressed. And we really need to have good safety testing on these things. And the fact that it doesn't, in my mind, can only be attributable to the fact that we have indemnified the pharmaceutical companies and we've expected them to act in the best interest of our children, which I don't think they are. This is Phil Ferrand, and it's time for me to go get Aiden.